Well, it's good to be here. Wonderful to be here. We're really grateful to have the opportunity. The music was just really, really fine and encouraging to see. Echo the song leader's comments about it. You know, some songs, when they're sung and they have words, they guide your thoughts in a certain direction. Other times, when they don't have words, you're sort of left on your own to deal with whatever enters your mind when the song is playing. And when special music is played on the Sabbath and it's an instrumental, you know, just knowing that the Sabbath is a reminder of God's creation. Sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes I just close my eyes and listen and see where my thoughts go, you know. And some of those songs, you know, they were just... it was like a running movie reel in my head of going over some of the majestic mountains and beautiful scenes on earth. And just, you know, it's funny how music can inspire thoughts and memories and impressions of the creation that God has made and put our minds there. And I found that in these pieces of music and very appreciative for it. Of course, one of the great things about learning music is not just the music that is pleasing to the ear and enjoyable to listen to. That's the end product. But for the musicians themselves, learning to play and learning to sing is such a good character development in life, especially when they're young. They do call it a discipline. And it is a discipline to put in the long hours of practice and sometimes tackling things that are hard to master and yet patiently staying at it. It's one of those things in life that produces some elements of character that will serve them in other ways as life goes on, far beyond just the area of music. So it's always nice to see our young people getting that kind of background and then being able to serve the whole church that way. Well, some weeks ago, and Mr. Franks and Mr. Horchek asked me if I'd be interested in coming here, and just jumped at the chance. I appreciated the opportunity. The last 2 years, they've brought back glowing reports. I think Mr. Franks even talked about it on In Accord 2 years ago, how impressed he was with the young people here. And I know they've just really enjoyed it coming the last 2 years. And then we walk in today and I realize, man, it seems like there's so many names and faces I recognize. And then I started thinking, well, over the last 26 years, we've spent time in Wilkes-Barre and Selins Grove, and then in Akron and Youngstown, spent time in Cincinnati, time in Raleigh, and then 4 out of the last 6 feasts at the Poconos. So, yeah, I guess you recognize a lot of people when you come in, some relatively new acquaintances, and some of you going back for 25 years or more. So it's almost like a coming home to be able to come here, and we really appreciate it. I guess if I've been asked once, I was asked a dozen times today, how was your flight? And maybe you had your eyes on the Dallas weather too. Our flight was fine, only an hour delayed. The pilot came on and said, be grateful you're getting out early because it's going to get worse as the day goes on. And those who are not from Texas get a little nervous about it. Those of us who are go, well, that's Texas in April. You know, you're going to get hail and tornadoes and strong thunderstorms. That's just the way it is. And you just work with it. But just before services, one of the ladies here said, thank you for not bringing any tornadoes with you. And I said, you're welcome. But what's with the snow? This is our second trip in 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago was Minneapolis, and there was snow there. And I looked out this morning, and there was I told you, I said, there's snow on the cars. What's up with that? And I thought about rubbing it in, about my tomatoes being about this big and my peaches about this big. Then I thought, don't rub in anything, because in about 3 months, you're going to wish you were in Pennsylvania or Minneapolis when it's 110 in Texas. So it's every part of the country has its good and bad. I do bring you greetings from everybody at the office. We have a very close-knit group there, and we're always talking every week with one another about where we're going or what's going on. And everybody always says to please pass on their greetings, whether they know anybody here or not. We feel very supported and encouraged by members all the time from around the world, and it's just something we appreciate. It's always busy there, just on different things. Right now, we've been extremely busy with the Feast of Tabernacles registration. The next issue of Discern just went to the printer this past week. You'll be getting that shortly. We're working on conference planning, Foundation Institute graduations coming up. There's just a lot of things going on, and it's always interesting and always busy. I won't take a lot of time to talk about media because we just sent out a very detailed report to all of the pastors at the Days of Unleavened Bread. I don't have any new statistics or facts and figures to give to you. One of the things we sent out, and I guess we sent it out for everybody to use at their discretion as they wanted to, but we were able to send out a number of comments that are coming in now. In the last couple of months, we've gone from getting about 100 pieces of personal correspondence to answer every month to about 300 to answer. And of course, when people start writing, that's, we try to reach out to people. That's the work that we have to do, is to reach out to people. When they reach back to you, that tells you that it's connecting, and people start writing in, and sometimes they're just commenting, sometimes they're asking about things, sometimes they're seeking counsel on issues, or sometimes they're asking Bible questions. It's always very interesting, and when you start getting correspondence from people all over the world, it is very interesting to us. It's interesting to us as well that 57% of the people who come to Life Open Truth are coming through mobile devices, not their computers. Their telephones, their tablets, their smartphones. And, from a lot of us who have thought about computers, for a younger generation, that's just natural. But for a lot of us older, we think about computer. But the world is engaging through the ever-changing world of technology. And these mobile devices, people see all over the place. I know Mr. Franks was in Africa a couple of years ago, and he came back and he said it was very interesting at Sabbath services. They're out in a village, and there was no electricity. There's no running water, but there are people checking their smartphones. They charge them through solar panels, and they're on these devices. And we get comments from places like Ethiopia and Tanzania, and sometimes in-depth comments and questions, and you realize somewhere out there is somebody, maybe in a little village, who you can never be fooled just because of their financial situation they may be in. They may be very poor, but that does not mean that they are not aware and interested in the same things that people around the world are interested in, and that is, what's my purpose in life? What is going on? Why is there suffering? What happens after death? The things that are the core issues, the core issues of all humanity. So that's always really interesting when we see those things come in, and to see the growth. We just continue to be amazed and grateful at the growth of and the reach of Life Open Truth. Our biggest projects now and focus this year is adding video to Life Open Truth and increasing the video production, expanding the Learning Center, getting a Bible study course up and going that will be a great addition to it. We are actually filming right now a series on the Ten Commandments and doing the writing for a series on the Holy Days. The video is not meant to take the place of the written material. It's designed to create interest and draw people to the written material. It's always been that way. Even when we had a 30-minute television show back in the 60s or 70s or 80s, when Mr. Armstrong was on television throughout the United States and much of the world, he always directed people to the booklet, send off of this booklet, get this magazine, get this correspondence course, because it's when people start to really dig in their study is when they really start to accumulate the knowledge. So, and yet video is very effective in helping people to grab attention and to be intrigued and to be able to make a personal connection. To see a person is always simply more personalized and interesting and helpful to draw people to the written material. So We did have a small staff, very small staff. We're always working to try to make it more effective, and there's always more ways to make it better, but we are appreciative of what has been done. So, again, Dee and I really appreciate the chance to be here and thank all of you, as Mr. Henson did, for the work that you've put into it, and so many of you for coming so far. And I hope you have a very fine weekend, and we look forward to visiting with you for the rest of the day. As Mr. Epps mentioned in the opening prayer, a lot of this weekend is geared to young people. That's if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be having this weekend. And so as we pick subjects to talk about, we always try to think first of all of the audience. And you obviously think about young people for the weekend, but then again, you don't want to exclude anybody of any age. And so you try to talk on principles. And I hope that what I have for you today may be helpful. And I'd like to begin with a little parable that I heard some years ago. And I'm not sure where this parable originated. Every culture has its own stories and parable. But when I heard this, it was quite interesting to me. So there was a man who was walking in the desert one day, a poor man, when a voice said to him, "Pick up some pebbles and put them in your pocket, and tomorrow you will be both sorrowful and glad." So he obeyed the voice. He stooped down and picked up a handful of pebbles and put them in his pocket. And the next morning, he reached into his pocket and he found, instead of pebbles, he found diamonds, rubies, emeralds, precious stones. And immediately, he was both sorrowful and glad. He was glad he had picked them up, and he wished he would have picked up more. Now, that's fiction, of course, but parables are designed to be fictional stories that teach a lesson. And it is a parable, but it parallels something that is very real. And what is real is that as you walk through this desert of life, there is a voice, a real voice, that is telling us to pick up something that is right in front of us, something that whatever amount you pick up will benefit you greatly, but it's also something you can never get enough of. The voice says to us, "This is more precious than rubies. And all the things you desire cannot compare to her." Now, if we were to take all the young people in here and say, "Give me the top 10 things you desire," and put them all together, and I've read you the list, I could look at that and say, "Well, that's really neat, but that cannot compare to this. All the things you desire cannot compare with her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand, riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all of her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are all who retain her." This voice says about this thing you can pick up, "She will promote you, and she will bring you honor when you embrace her. She will, in fact, preserve you." The voice says about this thing, "I have strength. By me, kings reign and rulers decree justice. By me, princes rule and nobles and all the judges of the earth. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently will find me. Riches and honor are with me. Enduring riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yes, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I traverse the way of righteousness in the midst of the path of justice, that I may cause those who love me to inherit wealth, that I may fill their treasuries." Now, there are many people in this world who've never heard this voice. And there are other people who have only heard it when they were quite a bit older. But for the young people here today, they have the chance of hearing this voice already. The voice is not saying to pick up pebbles, but the voice is saying pick up words. Pick up some words and put them not in your pockets, but put these words in your mind, in your heart. And these words, if kept in the heart, I guarantee you, will turn into precious stones. They will turn into precious stones. The voice that I've been quoting, those words I quoted to you, are the voice of God. It's the voice of God. I quoted to you scriptures. The pebbles that you pick up are called proverbs. And when you live by those words, they will turn into some precious stones called wisdom. Be called wisdom. So, this sermon is really for everyone, but I am targeting especially young people today. I would like for them to really consider this as we go through here and take a look. Take a look at your life and where you were going. And eight of you are graduates, graduating from high school in a few days. Some of you are working toward that in a year or two or three. Some of you are a year or two or three removed from it. But all of you are heading toward that stage of life of getting ready to go out on your own. And I hope to be able to put your minds on something that cannot guarantee your success, but if you use it properly, it will. It will take you in an entirely different direction in life than you could ever imagine. Now, I would like to begin by asking you three really important questions, and I want you to write them down. If you are not taking notes today, then I hope that you will get these questions from somebody. Commit them to memory, get them down. You cannot answer them here, because to answer them with any depth of thought will take some time. Maybe there will be one or two that you can quickly have an answer to, but by and large, they will take a little time. So I'm not expecting an answer here, but you would be wise to answer them at some point. And I ask these questions not to get an immediate answer, but to illustrate something as we begin to explore this topic. Question number one, who is the wisest person you know? Who is the wisest person you know? Question two, what are some of the best pieces of advice anyone ever gave you? What are some of the best pieces of advice that anyone ever gave you? And number three, complete this sentence. I would be much wiser if I would be much wiser if I fill in the blank. I asked those three questions to just get us thinking about something. Let's go back to the first question. Who was the wisest person you know? There may be some of you in this room who've never even asked that question before of yourself. And bigger than that, though, how many discussions have you ever had at school, or on the job, or even at church, about who is wise among us? We've had discussions, I'm sure, about who's smart, who's good looking, who's a good athlete, who has a great personality. But the question is, how many people ever talk about who is wise? Who is wise? Do we ever think much about that? Who is wise? Realistically, I think very few people go through life evaluating other people through the eyes of wisdom. That's a wise person. How many times do we think in those ways? And then what happens? Well, when you're in a bind, when you're in a situation where you need some advice, who do we tend to go to? We tend to go to who? Friends, people we know, people it's easy for us to talk to, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the best person to go to. Whereas if we were thinking regularly in life about who is wise, when we needed advice, we might tend to think more about who do I need to talk to? Who can give me some sound advice? But the question is, how much do we think about other people in terms of wisdom? The second question, what are some of the best pieces of advice anyone ever gave to you? Well, I ask that question to illustrate the point that I think a lot of times people don't think a lot about collecting advice. I'm going to collect. Oh, that is a smart thing to. That was good. I'm going to write that down. I'm going to save this. I want to make sure I keep this in my head. That's helpful. That is sound. That's good reasoning. If we were thinking in terms of collecting wisdom, collecting gems, pearls of value, that would enrich and deepen our lives. It would help us think in a different way. And the third question, or wasn't a question actually, but the sentence, I would be much wiser if I, and again, you'll have to fill in the blank. The point of this is not to answer it for you, but the point is to help us ask, how often do we process the events of our lives from the standpoint of thinking, how can I be a wiser person? How can I be a wiser person? Young people are going to put a lot of time in their junior, senior years thinking about where am I going to go to college? What am I going to do after I graduate? Do I go to community college? Do I go to trade school? Do I take a couple of years off? Do I want to travel? What am I going to do? What do I want to study? What do I want to be? I remember Mr. Myers at Camp Heritage one year. I was standing at the back watching one of his Bible studies. And he just asked everybody, he said, okay, tell me what you want to be when you grow up. And the first one starts out, I want to be an engineer. The next one, I want to be a nurse. I want to be, whatever. And they went down through the line, all 20 of them. And at the end, Mr. Myers, in his own style, grinning, and he says, that's really good. He said, well, that's not what I asked. He said, you told me what you want to do. I asked you, what do you want to be? What do you want to be? You can't do wisdom, but you can be wise. But how often do we even think about that as we go through life and preparing ourselves for our future? And how big a part of that is it in our lives where we say, okay, I want to be wise. I can be a wiser person if, well, I would submit to you that that is very important. Who talks about wisdom today? Who thinks in those terms? But the Bible is full of it. And the Bible tells us so much about the need for wisdom. That is precisely the plea that you read in the introductory chapters to the book of Proverbs. God says it's out there. It is just waiting to be picked up. It's out there. Get all that you can. Now, it's for people of any age. And there are a lot of conceptions about this, but nowhere in Proverbs does it say, you have to get at least 50, 60 years under your belt before we can even talk about whether you're wise or not. I mean, really, wisdom, that's for the old gurus who live up in the cave somewhere, right? No, the point of Proverbs is that one of the fundamental appeals of Proverbs is for young people. To be wise young people. There's an interesting statement in the book of Job. When Job was going through one of the most difficult times of his life, and he had some friends around him. And in one translation, they were called miserable comforters. They weren't giving him very good advice. They were full of advice. They had lots of advice. They were very good at analyzing, and one had a theory this way, and one had a theory that way, and they were telling Job, well, this is why you've got your problems, this is what you have to do, and none of it was working. And so there was a time in chapter 32 when they just stopped talking to Job. They just ceased answering him. In verse 1 it says, because he was righteous in his own eyes. So even Job, in the middle of this trial, you know, when you're in a time of a difficulty, sometimes it's really hard to think clear-headedly. And he was in pain. He was suffering terrible loss. He was in a time of suffering and high emotions. And it is hard in those times to be just totally clear-headed. And sometimes you do need other people around you to help. But they have to be clear-headed too. And in this case, it just wasn't working. There was a man there. He was a younger man. In verse 6, it says, so Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, answered and said, I am young in years. We don't know how old he was, but he was younger than the rest of them. And he'd just been listening because he felt like it wasn't his place. He says, I am young in years, and you are very old. Therefore, I was afraid and dared not declare my opinion to you. See, everybody has an opinion. It's not that he didn't have one, but he said, I'm not about to talk here. But as time went on, he makes an interesting observation. I said, apparently in his mind, age should speak, and multitude of years should teach wisdom. Now, he made a realization here. It should, but it doesn't always. There are a lot of people who walk through life and they never collect wisdom. They just never collect it. You've heard the old saying, there's no fool like an old fool, you know, because you would hope that by the time you get old, you're not a fool anymore. We all do foolish things. And so he was observing this. And then in verse 8, he said, but there is a spirit in man, and the breath of the Almighty gives him understanding. There is an understanding that is not limited to age. Young people can have it. They can be wise beyond their years comparatively to other people around them. Verse 9, great men are not always wise, nor do the aged always understand justice. And actually, he was going to make some very important observations for Job, the youngest among them. So wisdom is not something that's limited to certain circumstances, certain ages, whatever. But it has to be gone after. It has to be picked up. God will put it there before us, but he's not going to bend over and pick it up and put it in your pocket for you. He just doesn't. He makes it available. So, as you go through life, the urge of God is get your high school diploma. Get your continuing education. Get your good grades. Get your career going. Get your husband. Get your wife. Get your children. But most of all, have it in your plan to get wisdom. Get wisdom. And there are many sources, but begin with the foundation of God's Word. And the foundation is found in the book of Proverbs. Now, I'm not going to tell you a lot of Proverbs today. We're not even going to be in it a whole lot, but I will tell you some things about it that make it relevant. Make it relevant. Most of the Bible is written from the perspective of Israel in the Old Testament and the church in the New Testament. And there are parallels of those two together. There's a great sense in the Bible of Israel's unique place in history. There are many other nations around. There were great world powers in different parts of the world. But the Bible is a story about Israel, and actually Israel is sort of a microcosm of a lot of humanity. You see human nature portrayed very well. It's good and it's bad. But a young person can read much of the Old Testament, and it can just be history. It can just be history of old, long ago, thousands of years ago, people and events. And unless somebody explains the relevance to life, it won't mean a lot. Mr. Henson mentioned that I have a chance to teach at Foundation Institute. Well, I teach first semester course on the former prophets. The former prophets are Joshua, Judges, 1 and 2 Samuel, and 1 and 2 Kings. And I tell them at the beginning, this is a history course. It covers about 800 years of history. And the first question I ask is, do you like history? Some hands go up, some hands stay down. And the point of it is, if you look at it solely as history, you're not going to get a lot out of it. So the whole focus of the class is to try to make it relevant. What are the lessons of this history? What do you see in these stories that you take and you say, wow, that's us today. This is something I can learn. It becomes relevant. But you have to sort of work at it to tie in the history of the past to the present. But Proverbs is not read that way. You cannot read Proverbs as history. It has nothing historical in it. And none of the wisdom literature does. Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Job. It's not about another time. It's not about another people. It's about now. It's relevant. It is about life. Wisdom has to do not with the history of humanity, but with the concerns of humanity. Wisdom has to do with the concerns of humanity. And when you read a book like Proverbs, it doesn't matter if somebody is a Jew or a Greek, if they're Chinese or American or Babylonian or Egyptian or male or female or a king or a slave or young or old. It doesn't matter. None of that is really relevant to the wisdom of the Proverbs. The quest for wisdom has to do with the basic interest of living every day in a relationship with other people and in a relationship with God. And that's what you see that makes this book different from so many of the others. And what you read in there is timeless. If you were to study the book of Proverbs, I would say read Proverbs with the idea, I'm going to put a red circle around every verse that is irrelevant to life anymore. That might have been good back then, 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, but it, you know, that's has no application today. I would say go through the book of Proverbs and ask which of these has no application, no relevance to life today. You're going to be hard put to circle anything. Hard put to circle anything. These were Proverbs written thousands of years ago by many different people, but these people detach themselves. It's a kind of writing that you detach yourself from the limits of your time and your culture. In a sense, whoever wrote Proverbs, and I say whoever because we may say, well, Solomon wrote Proverbs. Well, he did write some of them, but a lot of them he collected. It says that he collected them. Whoever wrote them, and it doesn't matter who wrote them, the emphasis is not on the writer, it's on the truth of the matter. But they sort of brought history to a standstill. And they are rather analyzing human existence. They're not analyzing events, they're analyzing the way humans exist. They reflect on the problems of society, on the problems of individuals, the challenges. And in doing so, they might have been written 3,000 years ago, and we read them today, and we're not thinking about how they apply to history. We're thinking about how do these principles apply to the challenges of life. And when you read something like that and you say, yes, that is true today as well, we are learning something out of that. And that is that societies and cultures and technologies can change tremendously, but the root issues of human nature are always the same. Human nature doesn't change. Everything around us can, but human nature doesn't. And these Proverbs are written about human nature. How to live, how to relate, what works, what doesn't work. The Sansino commentary on Proverbs says, no phase of human relationships seems to be overlooked. The king on his throne. Now, let me stop here and interject. If we're reading this and you say, oh, the king on his throne, okay, that scripture is not relevant to me because I'm not a king. Well, actually, it's not talking as much about kingship as it's talking about leadership. So, for you young guys out here, if you want to be the king of your house someday, it's for you. If you want to be the queen of your children, it's for you. It is about leadership. So, he says, the king on his throne, the tradesman in his store, and the farmer in the field, husband and wife and child, all receive wholesome instruction and exhortation. Advice is tendered on the treatment of friends, the poor, the rearing of children, the snares which lurk in the path of youth, the perils of overconfidence and commitment. These and other contingencies provide occasion for shrewd counsel, based on the central doctrine that wisdom is a tree of life to them that lay hold upon her, and happy is everyone that holds her fast. That's chapter 3 and verse 18. That's what it's based on, the doctrine that wisdom is a tree of life. Let's see, where else have we heard that term, a tree of life? What does the tree of life have to do with? Well, the tree of life is all about the process of salvation and eternal life. And we also know that the process of eternal life and salvation has to do with a way of living. A lot of it has to do with a way of living. The value to us of this, one of the great values to us in having a book in the middle of this collection of books, having a book that has hundreds of these little gems of thought. The great value to us is that we don't have to be shrewd thinkers. We don't have to be the great philosophers of the world. We don't have to be somebody with unusually canny insight. You don't have to be the one who has a way with words to become wise. Other people have done it for us. All we have to do is pick up the pebbles and use them. There, you know, there is not a whole lot left for humanity to discover about how to relate to God and one another. It's all in here. We don't have problems in the world because there's just some lack of knowledge somewhere. If we could only find it, we could have it. It's all here. It's here for us. It's already been laid out. So we have the knowledge. God's provided that. But what is left for each person to discover is that each individual, each person has to find it. It's there. It's not that it doesn't exist. The challenge is that we have to find it. We have to find it when it's there. But the great advantage in that, in God preserving this for us, is that we don't have to go out and discover something from scratch. Other people have already discovered it. It's already been discovered. It's already been learned. All we have to do is go out and pick up what's already been identified. That's one of the great advantages, one of the great blessings that God has given us. Let me draw an analogy for you, for those of you in school. Every course that you have had in school, every single course that you have studied has been about your discovering what somebody else has already learned and written about. Everything you've studied was about what somebody else has learned and written about. That's a great advantage. They are simply telling you what they've already learned. Can you imagine walking into an algebra class? And the teacher gets up and says, now, you must pass this class in order to graduate. I've got a book for you. There's nothing in it but blank pages. This is a course on algebra. I have no idea what algebra means. I don't know what we're talking about. All I know is you're going to be tested at the end of the year and you better pass it. But we've got to go figure out what it is, class. Now, how fun would that be? What if it was like that for every class? No, there have been other people who've figured out algebra a long time ago. And there have been people who've written it down, they've organized it, they've structured it, they've outlined a procedure for learning it. And so we go into class, we pick up the book. Some of us learn it more easily than others, but you know, it's been done for us. Our only job is discovery. Discovery and using, applying it, learning it that way. Well, wisdom is the same thing. Wisdom is the same thing. Others have figured it out. They've written it down. All you have to do is pick it up, learn it, and apply it. You don't have to be a genius to become wise. But you can look around in life and see a lot of geniuses who are fools. They've never gotten wisdom. They may be smart. They may have a lot of intellect, a lot of knowledge, but that does not mean they are wise. Does not mean they are wise at all. So, you don't have to be a genius. But if you get it, you will be smarter than a lot of people around. You will have what a lot of people call common sense. Except people call it the wrong thing. People call it the wrong thing. Because common sense really isn't very common. You can read the book of Proverbs, and it's a collection of uncommon sense. Because a lot of people do not live wise lives. To live a life of wisdom is not common. If you can pick these pieces up, these pearls, and start collecting them, and live life according to the wisdom that is in here, you will be an uncommonly wise person. And you can be uncommonly wise at an early age. One commentator writes that Proverbs express in a few words the obvious principle of conduct. And they give clear thoughts and even clearer expression to embody the central truths of life in the terseness of a memorable phrase. You can take a proverb and you can build a whole sermon around a proverb. But the proverb itself is a very concise, memorable phrase. You can take it with you. You can remember it. It can stick in the mind. You can hold it easily in your hand of memory when you need it. It comes back to mind. It says the writer must be a thinker, an accurate observer, a profound moralist, a psychologist, and an artist as well, because there's an art to phrasing and concisely capturing a truth of life. Well, what happens is that God preserved it. God inspired these things. But again, we have to search them out. It's common sense, but it's deep common sense. It's verifiable experience. Sansino says again, the Proverbs urge the fundamental thesis. What is the fundamental thesis as you look at the book of Proverbs, would you say? If you've studied English lit, you've probably had to consider what is the thesis of this, what is the fundamental point. The Proverbs urge the fundamental thesis that the morally defective. Now, let's look around at life. Do we see any morally defective people in the world today? There are a lot of morally defective people. They urge the fundamental thesis that the morally defective and the willfully perverted stand in their own light, bringing avoidable troubles on their heads. Trouble that could be avoided is brought on their heads, and though they may at times have a momentary triumph, they ultimately fall. On the other hand, to conduct oneself in the light of wisdom means to get the best out of life, discover sources of strength which ensure final victory over calamity and evil, and become a blessing to oneself and society. The person who lives by wisdom, not only does it impact their lives, but it impacts the lives of others. The wisdom of child rearing, the wisdom of maintaining the marriage relationship, wisdom that's involved, that is the key. The wisdom to know how to behave on the job, wisdom how to deal with people. So God has preserved the keys to life for us. And it's absolutely important because there are many other ideas out there that are competing and that are wrong. They're competing and they're wrong. They're misguided. They're misleading. There are many philosophies. By the way, do you know what the word philosophy means? Philosophy means the love of wisdom. The love of wisdom, the study of wisdom. There are great philosophers, but there are some great philosophers who are misguided in their thinking. So it must be God's wisdom. Now, a little bit about the people that God used to teach. The people that God used then and still uses through sometimes the spoken word, sometimes the written word. Besides parents, parents are the primary teachers. There were three classes of teachers that existed in ancient Israel. There were three different types of teachers in ancient Israel. Let's take a look at Jeremiah 18. Jeremiah 18 and verse 18. We read here, Jeremiah 18, 18. Then they said, come and let us devise plans against Jerusalem, or rather against Jeremiah. For the law shall not perish from the priest, nor counsel from the wise, nor the word from the prophet. You will see the same thing in Ezekiel chapter 7 and verse 26. It mentions the same three categories. Ezekiel 7, 26. Disaster will come upon disaster, and rumor will be upon rumor. Then they shall seek a vision from a prophet, but the law will perish from the priest, and counsel from the elders. So you had the priests, the prophets, and the elders. Those were three different types of teachers in ancient Israel. They existed in society, and we have all three categories who contributed to the writings in the Bible. The priest had the duty of providing the community with instruction from the law of God. Their domain was the law and the practices of religion. Malachi 2:7 says, for the lips of the priest should keep knowledge, and people should seek the law from his mouth, for he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts. So you had priests. They had this primary responsibility of teaching the law. Then you had prophets that were sent on the scene. And these were individuals who came in that God placed at very important times, at very important junctures in the nation's history, and they had important roles to play because they were to communicate to the people at the time the word or the vision that they had received from God. So you see the Isaiahs, the Jeremiahs, the Ezekiels, the 12 minor prophets. They brought the word of God for particular situations. And then you had the wise, or the elders. These were people who were to impart counsel, guidance, in the general affairs of life. They were not necessarily given divine authority like the priest and the prophets. When you read about the elders and the wise, never do they insert thus saith the Lord, you know, things like that. But their teaching was in harmony with the law. It's in harmony with the message of the prophecies. But they explained in everyday terms the fundamental truths about the way life works. These were the counselors. They were the guides in life and why life works and why it doesn't work in certain ways for certain people. These were just the practical application people. It was the means of translating into specific terms the way of life that was indicated in the scriptures. You have the law of God. For example, the law describes the conditions and the penalties for improper sexual behavior. There are a number of laws that talk about the conditions and the penalties. When you get into the Proverbs, that's not what they talk about. They talk about improper sexual behavior, but the Proverbs talk about what goes on in the mind that leads to it. How you avoid getting into the wrong situations. The Proverbs give the counsel on how to live your life, how to understand life and what works, what doesn't work. All three of these teaching styles work very well together. Now, the concept of different types of teachers is not strange to us. We see that teaching takes many different forms. We have in the church today even, we have our formal systems of teaching and learning, and we have our informal systems of teaching and learning. We have elders in the church today that are in the ministerial sense, that they have a proper and a God-ordained role to play in service to the church. But we also have elders in an informal sense, people who are simply around who've lived a lot of life, and they've understood the scriptures, and they have the ability to discern and to teach and to mentor. And they have a proper and God-ordained role to play in the development of the church. There's a scripture, for example, that says the older women should teach the younger. That's a role of an elder in terms of somebody who is older and experienced passing on wisdom. It's an important part of it. That's where a lot of the influence of God's way of life takes place, in that family, that church family connection. That's why I asked the question, who's the wisest person you know? You might come up with somebody who is quiet, doesn't give opening and closing prayers, doesn't lead songs, doesn't give sermonettes, but you know, because you've been over to their house and you've sat and talked with them, that, man, they've got a lot going on up here. They have a lot of just good common sense up here. There's somebody you can go to and they have discernment. They can tell you, yeah, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, and here's why. They are just very sound, wise people. These are often the pillars of the church, of a church family. We all need them. We need all elements of this. And they help us that way. We need one another. It's good to identify those who have learned the way of God. I have a friend that I've called over the years to bounce things off of his mental walls. You bounce something off, because over the years I've seen, you know, I understand where he's coming from, and he's got a mind. He's an excellent counselor, because he can just sort of crystallize he'll listen very carefully, listens carefully, and then he can just sort of condense and crystallize to the heart of the problem and come up with a cause and then identify a solution. And I've told people, if they said, well, who should I go for counsel? Why don't you go try, give that person a call. Give that person a call. I think he's a wise person. I don't think he would ever identify himself as being a wise person. He doesn't think of himself. He doesn't go around saying, you know, here's my phone number, I'm pretty wise. You know, he wouldn't think of himself that way. I look at him that way. And I've known women that way, and older women and younger women. I've seen some young adult women who I thought were wise beyond their years, and some young adult men. And these things are very important. It's one of the ways that God works. So God can grant that giftedness. In fact, in 1 Corinthians 12, it talks about the Spirit of God at work, and it says, you know, to one is given the word of wisdom, to other the word of knowledge. Now, it doesn't mean that the one who has the word of wisdom has no knowledge, and the one who has knowledge has no wisdom. But it does mean that there are different gifts that God has given that we should use. So, pulling the wisdom from other people is important. There's another thing that's very important to do in seeking wisdom as a young person. The wisest person who ever lived, who's recorded, you know how he got his? First thing he did was he asked for it. One of the most important things you can do as a young person is ask God for wisdom. James says, is there any who lacks wisdom among you? I think that's pretty well all of us. Let him ask for it, but don't ask wavering. 1 Kings chapter 3. 1 Kings chapter 3. Interesting story, this one. Young man had just been put on the throne of Israel. He'd had all the schooling, had the privileges of life that afforded the best education, greatest exposure, had a great father from whom he had learned how to do some things and from whom he'd learned how not to do some things. But shortly after he is made the king, in chapter 3 and verse 5 of 1 Kings, it says that Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask, what shall I give you? And Solomon said, you have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. Translate for your life. Let's say, we'll start with the 8 graduates. And you're looking at, I'm graduating and I'm leaving home and I'm going to do what? I don't know. You know, I was on top of the world as a senior in high school and now I'm starting at the bottom again and I'm being thrown into this new environment. And what am I going to do? There are lots of things in life that we don't know how to go in and come out on. Lots of things in life that we go to God and say, I need some help. And your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or multiplied or counted. Some of you will be going off to college, and you're going to be going into an atmosphere that is anti-God. Just frankly is. It is going down and teaching philosophies that are going down a path that are unbiblical and very destructive, even though people don't see it. You're going to be in the middle of that, people. Therefore, verse 9, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? Give me an understanding heart. And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And then God said to him, because you have asked this thing, and have not asked long life for yourself, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked for the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice. Behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall anyone like you arise after you. A wise and understanding heart. God never holds back on the request for wisdom. If you sincerely want wisdom, that's a prayer that, you know, if you go to God and say, I need $5,000, you know, right now, man, there's a girl tonight I want to impress. I need just $50 to buy some roses, you know. And you start checking your wallet. Is it there yet? Is it there yet? He may not answer that prayer. But if you go to God and say, I need wisdom, He'll answer that prayer. That's just one thing that God will answer if you seek it, if you pursue it. So He told Solomon, I'm going to give you what you ask, and I'm going to give you riches and honor on top of it. In verse 14, so if you walk in my ways and keep my statutes and my commandments as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. Solomon awoke. It had been a dream. He came to Jerusalem. He made these offerings. And then one of the first things he has to deal with are these two women who come before him. And he exhibits here some, you know, brilliant judgment. Uncanny judgment. You would not find this. He didn't run down to the law library and say, well, let me see if I can see a precedent of what to do. You never would have seen this precedent. It was an unusual case. He said, bring me a sword and I'll just cut this baby in half. And everybody's jaw dropped. And that one mother, the real mother, came and said, no, give it to her. Well, notice verse 28. All Israel heard of the judgment which the king had rendered, and they feared the king, for they saw the wisdom of God was in him to administer justice. The wisdom of God. That's what we want. That's what we need, is the wisdom of God. It's throughout the Bible, of course. But if you want to start at a place where it's just all put in one nice package, start in the book of Proverbs. Start in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 1. Notice this. Proverbs 1:1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction. To know wisdom and instruction. To perceive the words of understanding. Now, I won't turn there, but you can jot down 1 Kings chapter 4, 29 through 34. Solomon collected proverbs from all over the world. Chapter 5 and verse 12. Chapter 10 of 1 Kings. So many people heard from all over. The Queen of Sheba comes to prove to herself all everything she had heard, and it was far more than what she thought it was. And then you come to chapter 11, and it says, Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites. And verse 4, for it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods. He neglected some of the key points of wisdom that he himself had written. So there is a matter of discovering it, grabbing it, but then it has to be kept. It has to be applied. It can be lost. Wisdom can be lost if we lose our relationship with God. You can see this throughout. Many people contributed to the Proverbs, and you can see it throughout if you want to read a little bit of this. Rabbinic tradition says that Solomon wrote the Song of Solomon in his youth. He wrote the book of Proverbs in his middle age. And he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes in his old age. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But it makes sense when you read the books, if you know the themes to those books. Well, why does God feel that the book of Proverbs is so important for us, the pursuit of wisdom? Simply this. From the very beginning, there have always been ideas thrown at human beings. Satan was a master at throwing different ways of living, different philosophies, different questions. There are all sorts of things thrown at us, and they do shape our thinking. And then our thinking shapes our actions. It governs our actions, and our actions then develop our character. It develops our character. The way we think molds and shapes habits, and habits shape character, and your character will shape your quality of life. It just happens. With all the mixed messages coming at us about morality. What is right? What is wrong? What is truth? How to get along with your neighbor? What are your responsibilities in society? What are your obligations to people? What are you supposed to do? And most important, the ideas about God today. There are so many messages, contrarian messages coming at us. How do we sort through it? How do you filter those things? Well, you have to have wisdom. It's not just knowledge. You have to have wisdom. In a world that is shaping and turning our thinking away from God, we have to have wisdom because we are in a war. You're in a war. You're in a war for your mind. It's the war that everybody is in. We're in the war for the mind. Are you familiar with the proverb, in a multitude of counselors, there is safety? Everybody familiar with that proverb? In a multitude of counselors, there is safety. Are you familiar with the first part of that proverb? What precedes that statement? It's just as important. Let's take a look at Proverbs 24. Proverbs 24. Proverbs 24, and let's begin in verse 5. A wise man is strong. There's another thing it does for you. A wise man is strong. If you lack wisdom, you're in a weak position. A wise man is strong. Yes, a man of knowledge increases strength. For by wise counsel, you will wage your own war. And in a multitude of counselors, there is safety. We often quote that last part, in a multitude of counselors, there's safety. And that's a very good part to quote. But the context is, you're going to be waging a war in life. You're fighting a war. And it's a war that everybody fights. Everybody is engaged in the battle for the mind. And that's why we need the multitude of counsel. Why we need God. Why we need the Proverbs, the truths of life that God says, here's a nugget, here's a gem for you. Remember this. If you can just remember this little saying, it can keep your mind on a certain track that's wise. There are a lot of problems going on in the world, a lot of wise people. There are prophecies in Jeremiah and Isaiah about people who are wise, that are so-called wise, that are leading the country down the drain. We need wise people. We need mentors. We need older people who can mentor the younger. And when I said we need older people, I did not say we need old people. We need older people. If you're 25 and have figured out some of the right things in life, maybe you can have an impact on a 15-year-old. You're older. And if you're living wisely, you can help younger pick up as many of those pebbles of wisdom as possible and become wise young people. One of the greatest contributions that the elders can make in the church is the passing on of wisdom. Just talking about what works in life, what doesn't work. And one of the greatest contributions that young people can make to the church is just seek wisdom from God. Seek wisdom from Him and the influence of His Spirit. That is so important. Proverbs is not the only source of wisdom, but it is a great place to start because it was preserved by God for that very purpose. God says, hey, right here, here's a whole bucket of pebbles you can pick up. Before coming here this afternoon, I went to my briefcase and I pulled out a stack of folders. It's things I carry with me all the time. There's the phone and address list folder, maps to the house, maps to the office, speaking schedules, international travel information, passport information. Then there's this last one. These other folders have come and gone over the years. This folder is 44 years old. Not the folder, but what's in it. In fact, what is in it is a photocopy of what was 44 years old because the other one was falling apart one time. In 1971, I was 19. And it was in the summertime break in college. And I was going to be staying there working. And just had a sense that a series of events in life had made me realize that I needed to understand a little bit more about life and how to live. It's just one of those phases in life you go to. And so I don't even remember what led to it, but I decided I'm going to go through the Proverbs. I'm going to take every single verse. Actually, I do remember what prompted it. It was the public relations director at Ambassador College who was talking one day, and he said, "My job is public relations with the community." He said, "Every day I read a chapter of Proverbs because that helps me understand how to relate in public better than anything else." So based on that, I think I took the book of Proverbs, and I decided to go through it very carefully, and I was going to make a concordance of subjects. And just each proverb is going to say, okay, what is this about? What is this about? It took the whole summer, because sometimes you just stop on one verse and you start looking at other translations and you look at, you know, different things. But I did try to work hard at it. It was one of those things. I was motivated at that time to work hard at it. It was one of the most practical things I ever did in my life. Practical. And eventually, when it was over, I had 31 categories. You can see them here. There are 31 categories. They are anger, child rearing, correction, counsel, encouragement, envy, foolishness, forgiveness, friendship, gossip, hatred versus love, honesty, kindness and mercy, laziness versus hard work, leadership and judging, lying and deceit, marriage, money, the mouth and tongue, pride versus humility, righteousness, self-control, self-righteousness, tactfulness, trusting God, and wisdom. And it took a summer, pages, okay, this proverb goes here under this category, this one goes there. And sometimes they'd go under multiple categories. And I'd say, well, this proverb goes under anger, but it also goes under self-control. So, you know, they went in different places. It wasn't a one-size-fits-all type of thing. Took all summer to do it. And those were pre-computer days. This is handwritten, the old-fashioned way. Took all those notes, eventually put it on some graph paper, five different columns, and I've carried it around for 44 years. And it's been pulled out a lot of times before going maybe on a counseling or to prepare a message or just to think about some personal issues, sometimes to reflect on some mistakes, sometimes to think about how to approach something different. And in that last 44 years, I've done a lot of dumb things. It doesn't mean that everything in life just went wisely from then on. I've done a lot of dumb things that I've regretted, and often I've reread some of these proverbs, and you go back to that proverb and say, yep, wish I'd have done that instead of this, because the proverb was right. The proverb was right in its wisdom. So I've done a lot of dumb things, but I would like to think that I haven't done near as many dumb things as I would have without having some of these principles imprinted in the mind. And maybe you don't think about it, but it's lurking back there. And when God's wisdom is lurking there, sometimes that's what stops you. Sometimes that's what makes you think differently. Sometimes that's what God uses to add a thought. And you may be going down this track of thinking, but then you remember a proverb that says, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Because this is what God says. This is what God says. Now, I'm not saying that you have to do what I did or the way that I did it, but I am saying that, again, God's not going to bend down and pick up the Proverbs and put them in your mind. He's put them in a bucket for you. They're right there. They are all available. What I am saying is do something to get wisdom. Do something to pursue wisdom. I am saying, especially to young people, that no matter how talented you are, no matter how popular you are, how wealthy you are, how smart you are, you may be all those things, but all those things put together won't count as much for the rest of your life as being wise. Being wise is going to tell you how to use all those things. And if you aren't one that, if you look at yourself and you say, well, I'm not talented, I'm not popular, and I'm not wealthy, and I'm not smart as other people, you can still be wise. You can still be wise, and that's going to put you far ahead of the game. So in closing, let's take a look at Proverbs chapter 4. Proverbs 4, I want to leave you with this. Hear, my children, the instruction of a father, verse 1, and give attention to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine. Do not forsake my law. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words. Keep my commands and live. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And in all you're getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she will promote you. She will bring you honor when you embrace her. She will place on your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory she will deliver to you.